Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends have to teach us about the way they view the world, their missions, and their incredible spiritual insights. I'd like to say a special welcome tonight to the people who tuned into my website and signed up for my newsletter from outside the United States, including those in Nepal, India, Australia, Alaska, Ontario, Vancouver, British Columbia, and Romania, which is my father's birthplace. Welcome to you. And now we have exciting news. We have a toll-free number that is worldwide toll-free. So I'd love to hear from you. This is your opportunity to talk to an animal communicator and talk to me without costing you anything. The toll-free number is 877-876-5227. Again, that's 877-876-5227. The first part of the show, my topic is going to be common problems with animals that an animal communicator can help you with. Please hold your calls during the first part of the show, which will be only about 10 minutes. The second part is reserved for listeners who may want to call in questions about the topic of today's show or perhaps have questions about their own pets. Don't be shy. Call in. I'm easy to get along with, and I would love to make contact with your pet. Tonight's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. They are the ones who published my book, Pets Tell the Truth, A Mystical Journey into the Animal Mind. You can contact them at www.garnettpublishing, that's with two T's, .com, or you can phone them directly at 216-458-6100 if they are calling for finished manuscripts. So if you would like your book or your manuscript published, they are very pleasant to deal with, and I highly recommend them. The call-in toll-free number, again, is 877-876-5227. Today we're going to talk a little bit about attachment and loss. Some of these are common problems that people call me about and are in general common problems with animals. If we have time, we'll talk about cats not using the litter box, dogs biting, and animals not eating, which is also a problem, fear behaviors, adoption issues, and so on. One of the most important things is attachment and loss. When an animal is born, actually, even before it's born, while it's still in utero, it picks up the rhythms of its mother. And I've done research on this to show that they learn a lot of things in utero. For example, if an animal has what's called sleep apnea, which is a periodic breathing during sleep, and because of the periodic breathing, they become hypoxic, their offspring will also have that same pattern. When animals are born, let's take a cat, for instance. The mother will lick her fur around her nipples to get the fur off. When the baby is born, the kittens will go to the mother that has the scent when she licks the baby when they're born. They will go to the nipples of the mother, even if there are several dams in the same box. They will go only to their mother. All other animals will do the same thing. They go by scent. Once they learn how to suckle from their mother, what happens is they become in telepathic communication with them. They actually become in equilibrium with them. The mother takes care of them. She licks them to trigger them to urinate. And she all around takes care of them. She's also their furnace. Baby animals, including humans, cannot maintain their own body temperature. They are totally dependent on their mother for that. If the mother leaves the pup or the kitten's body temperature will only stay warm as long as it's huddled in a pile with the other kittens. After a while, after several minutes, and the mother goes to eat or drink or use a litter box, and she comes back, she will resume heating the animals. This lasts for about 2 weeks in animals and about 4 weeks in humans. Animals were not born with the ability to regulate their own temperature because it takes environmental cues to program them. For example, an animal that's born in the Alaskan wilderness will require a different thermoregulation system than one born inside in a house that's kept at 73 degrees. So they need that. They need the mother to sort of keep them at the right temperature until their body adjusts and they can regulate their own body temperature. If you take, for example, a rat and she gives birth in the laboratory, this process involves several weeks. What she'll do is she will feed her pups, and during the first week, she will stay away from them only for a very short time just to groom herself and to eat her also. Then she will come back to her pups, and she will keep them warm. As this happens, she learns the pup learns several things. One, it can't always have its mother there. Second, she teaches it to be aware of hunger. So if the animal then feels food deprivation, then this is part of her training process of teaching her babies to feed themselves. If you tell me how long of a time the mother stays away from her babies, this is a rat, up to 45 minutes, I can tell you what age the babies are. Because as the mother stays away longer and longer periods, the animal has to develop the sense of hunger, thirst, or some other feature or coldness. And it's because of those things that the animal learns how to fend for themselves. This process in cats and dogs will go on for about 8 weeks. During that time, if the mother is in one place and one of the animals or her puppies have walked off somewhere, she will cry to them that she has lost temporarily telepathic communication with them, and her crying will draw the puppy back to the mother. If the puppy or the kitten is separated from its mother too soon, for example, in 4 or 5 weeks, the animal is not fully prepared for life and will have what's called separation anxiety. So if you think that you'd like to have a kitten or a puppy, make sure that it's about 8 weeks old, because otherwise that animal will cling to you and it will be very unhealthy. While it's very flattering to have an animal always want to be with you, you don't want it to cry the whole time that you're away from the house when you have to go to work during the day. There is something wrong with that, and the reason is that the animal has not developed the ability to maintain a telepathic communication with its mother. When the mother is ready at 7 or 8 weeks, she will boot the puppies out so that they take care of themselves. And when she does, she releases them from her telepathic hold because she has taught them already how to find food by themselves, how to take care of themselves, and they are prepared for life. This is also true in humans. If there is an early separation, humans will often suffer from separation anxiety their entire life. And it's very, very hard to deal with, because what the person experiences is the same the animal experiences, is when they are separated from their mother or from their primary caretaker, it could be the father, they experience a total confusion. What we call in psychology is cognitive dissonance. It means that you're confused. You've lost your bearings, and it's a very uncomfortable situation, and it's very hard to treat. It's also hard to treat in animals. When I get a case where an animal has been separated from its mother too soon, I try to reassure it that it is grown up and that its mother, you know, is fine, and that it is, even though it's not with its mother, it is fully prepared to take care of itself. And what I usually do is I ask the animal to show me its mother, and then I tell the animal to say goodbye and to tell the mom that this is the dog or the cat mom, that they are fine, they've been adopted by a wonderful family, and not to worry about them, and to wish their mother a happy life. And that usually works, but sometimes it involves many other types of behavioral problems. For example, if you have a cat or a dog that is clinging because it was separated from his mother too soon, he will be very jealous of the other animals in the house. He will often fight, cats will hiss, they'll bite, and they cause problems for the rest of the animals. It's because they want an exclusive one-on-one relationship. And in that case, you have to work very hard to try to explain to the animal that the mother has enough love for all the puppies, or for all the children in the house, or for everybody in the house, and that they're safe, they're secure, and this is their home for the rest of their life. It can be very problematic. Probably one of the most common issues in that comes to my experience. Counseling is a part of my experience as a animal psychologist and animal communicator. Counseling animals and their persons is really not unlike doing psychotherapy. Some of the same principles apply. For example, a main goal is to open up communication and understanding between the client and the pet. Sometimes it requires looking into the background of the pet to see where the behavioral problems came from. Usually it's attachment and loss. And sometimes when animals are given up for various reasons, not always they're abused, to animal shelters, the animal doesn't understand what it did wrong. You have to explain to the animal if they're being given up because mommy and daddy work during the day, they don't have the right time to give to it, or whatever, or their mom is in a nursing home, or someone has died, or so on. To all animals, all baby animals, the animal mother is mommy. And when they become pets of humans, they go right to another mommy, only this time it's a human mommy. It will leave an animal wondering what he did wrong to be punished in this way, meaning being given up, without the opportunity to change the behavior that caused the separation. It could cause great grief. Counseling will reveal the source of the pet's sadness, and often what is required is just a simple explanation that the family couldn't keep him any longer because they were moving, getting divorced, or so on. Sadness and depression enter the picture because the animal was never afforded the opportunity to say goodbye to the family, especially the children. That's what hurts animals the most, is the children are their playmates, their brothers and sisters, and if they're swept away and given away or sold or put up for adoption, they feel very sad because they miss the children. So in a case like that, I would contact the animal. The counselor is able to see actually what attachments the pet has, and if any of these are former family members. And so if I contact a dog and I ask why he's sad or what's going on, and I know he came from a shelter, he'll say that he misses the kids, and he will actually show me what they look like. And I will give him the opportunity, because he's connected to the kids, and he's also connected to me through telepathy, I will give him the opportunity to say goodbye. Now, animals don't have neurotic relationships like humans. They don't go on and linger and grieve so bad. They just simply want to say goodbye because they make friends like we do. When this happens, the animal is released from the past and is able to be fully present in his new family. Problems with prior physical abuse can be treated in the same way. As the communicator queries the pet, it becomes apparent that the animal has been beaten or otherwise mistreated. Some people adopt dogs, especially to be watchdogs or attack dogs or defense dogs, but they're not the right kind of breed for that. And so they tend to think that they can beat the dog into submission or make him more aggressive. It really doesn't work. By connecting with the animal, it becomes possible to also see what the perpetrator looked like and help the animal to release its fears. Many animals will cower, especially dogs, will cower when men come in the house. And it's not they know that person or anything. It's because they've been mistreated by a single man in their lifetimes, and they don't know what to do about it. They don't seek revenge, nor do they harbor grudges, because that would require a value judgment, and animals don't do that. So what I do with an animal that has been mistreated, I give them the opportunity to show me that person, and I have them thank the person for giving them a home and feeding them, and then say goodbye. Although this doesn't in any way undo the mistreatment, most animals are willing to let go of the past simply because they prefer to live in the present moment. For them, a bad experience is just another experience. They don't judge it or appraise it. We would like to hear from some callers. I would appreciate if somebody would call in. And I'd like to hear from you, Alaska or Romania or Nepal or Australia. So please call in about your pet. I would love to talk to you about your pet. When an animal communicator, while you're doing that, I'll just tell you a little bit more about the process of inquiry. Consultations usually begin by ordinary conversation with the client to define the purpose of the call. So some questions that are common in the beginning are, what animal do you wish to communicate today? Will you describe for me the age, sex, breed, and the physical appearance of the animal? You need that because if you're doing a telephone consultation, you need to imagine the animal in your mind, sort of envision the animal, and then you trace the heart connection from the person to their animal. Once you think you have the animal, then you validate it with the client. So if you're telling me that you want to talk to your black Labrador, I will connect with your voice, connect with the animal, and then once I see the animal, I will validate with you that I have your animal, because there may be hundreds or thousands of black Labradors. So I say, okay, is your animal right now 3 feet in front of you to the left, and he's laying by a red pillow? And if you say yes, then I know I have your animal. Then I will ask to open up a conversation with the animal. And since you're talking to the animal, you're really talking to spirit, and you have to ask permission. So then I say something like, my name is Agnes, and I'm talking to your mommy on the phone. Is it okay if we talk to you? And they usually say yes. Once in a while, they will say no. Once in a great while, they'll say no. And it's because either they're sleeping or they'll tell me that their person doesn't believe in this. They don't believe in animal communication. Then I ask the person to tell me what's going on with the animal. And they usually describe the presenting problem. He stopped eating. Okay. And then I ask the animal what's going on with him and why isn't he eating. And 9 times out of 10, the answer will be, the food doesn't taste good. And I'll say, okay, what do you mean it doesn't taste good? And they'll tell me that it doesn't taste like meat. And most of the time they'll say something like, it tastes like sawdust, which means that it's so dry. This is dry food now. It's so dry that the dog can't salivate to make it wet enough to swallow. In such a case like that, Sometimes it's very useful. They have on the market now some gravies that you can buy, especially for dogs, that you pour over the top of the dry food, which gives the beefy or the chickeny flavor. Once they have that flavor, the taste of meat, then they will salivate. And once they start salivating, even though it's the same dry dog food, they'll be able to make it moist enough to swallow. If it is a physical problem, I always ask first, has the animal been seen by a veterinarian, and what were their findings? And also, when the problem began. If you tell me that your dog has been pooping on the floor, I will ask, when did this start? It usually is associated with a separation, a teenager leaving the home to go to college or something. But if you tell me it's 4 years, there's very little I can do telepathically to correct the problem after 4 years. Some people will call and they'll say, I have a trouble potty training my dog. How long have you had it? Since it was born, okay, or since it was 8 weeks old. And it's always, pottied in the house. Well, you know, it's up to you when you adopt an animal to train your dog to potty outside. After the dog's 4 or 5 years old, there's nothing I can do to help. The animal needs to be retrained by a professional dog trainer, and you can find them in your telephone directory. The two most common problems concern dogs biting or cats urinating outside the litter box. In most cases, dogs bite because they're in pain. Dogs don't attack other beings because they don't like them. That would require a value judgment, which animals don't do. Sometimes, especially in small dogs, it is because of fear of attack by a larger animal or a person, and it becomes a matter of self-defense. In this case, you try to talk to the animal, tell them it's safe, reassure them that this is their permanent home, that they're not going to be abandoned, and when mommy and daddy leave the house, meaning the humans, that they will be back. Some owners train their dogs to be protection dogs, but then they complain when the dog protects them by biting persons who are invited into their home. When training a protection dog, it is necessary to clearly define who and what the dog is supposed to protect the family from. So if the dog barks at the mailman, that's okay because the mailman is outside the house. And you can define friend or foe as being anyone that is invited in the house is a friend of mommy and daddy, and anyone, so don't bark at them because they're friends, that they're okay. If they're outside of the house or on the street and they see someone trying to harm mommy and daddy, then it's okay to attack. But you can't have it attack a neighbor's dog or the neighbor as it comes up your front yard or the paper boy. So you must clearly define who's friend and who's foe. And that's simply a matter of being with the dog long enough to say, oh, that's the paper boy. He's a friend. So that the dog understands who he's supposed to attack and not attack. Cats are a different story. I get a lot of calls from people whose cats begin out of nowhere, it seems, to start to pee outside the litter box. Cats are already hardwired to protect a family within a certain area, usually inside of the house, and I do believe I've talked about this before. But since this is such a common problem, those of you listening tonight may not have heard it before. Cats have the ability to lay down an energy grid, which is from the mind. Okay, it is mental energy or psychic energy, and this will include all objects within the house. It takes a lot of mental energy for the cat, and the energy has to be maintained even when the cat's asleep. If something is moved or added or otherwise disturbs the energy grid, the animal must draw back the grid, reconsolidate, and lay it back down again. Supposing you bring a new piece of furniture in the house, or somebody new moves in the house. When he takes back its energy, the process takes about 3 days and requires a great deal of mental energy. Again, it's what they experience is cognitive dissonance. Now, an example of that would be if you went to a foreign country where you drove on the opposite side of the street, say Bermuda. You already know how to drive, but it can be very confusing remembering how to do a right turn and then translating that into doing a left turn in another country from a different lane. It's very, very disturbing. And this is what happens to animals. During this time, the boundaries are unprotected, and the cat responds by leaving its scent, which is more powerful. So it will spray or it will urinate in the corners because scent is a much stronger marker. Cats are desert animals. They're jungle animals. And they are territorial, and so they will mark their territory so that it keeps predators out, saying, this is my place, and you can't come in.
Now, we have a caller online. Do you want me to?
Yes, okay.
You got it. I'll put them on in about 4 seconds.
Okay. To avoid this, it is helpful for the owner or the person to tell the cat in advance what they're planning to do. And then the animal can pull back the energy grid into itself and allow for the change. Believe it or not, it does work. Hello, we have a caller.
Hi, Agnes. This is Lisa Laricuta from San Francisco. How are you?
I'm fine, Lisa. Thank you for calling. How can I help you?
How are you? I was just calling to say thanks again, and I was wondering if you would be willing to say hi to Beamer again for me today and just check in with him and see what's going on. He's doing okay, but he's been choking a lot, and I get very concerned. I feel like my heart's going to fall out.
Tell me again, Beamer's your dog?
No, Beamer's my little cat, and you and I spoke last week, and you told me to get some Pepcid, and he's got cancer, and it went to his lungs, and he's still with me.
I'm so glad he's still with you. Tell me his color. I don't have your card here.
His color is beige with brown. He's got blue eyes.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And he's just been, like, choking a little bit. He's definitely short of breath, but he's been choking, and I get worried.
Okay. Let me check in with Beamer. Is he there in the room with you, Lisa?
Yes, I'm looking
okay,
right
I
at
got him. Hi, Beamer. Hi, honey. This is Aunt Agnes. How are you doing today? I'm talking with your mom on the phone. Can we talk to you? Okay. Mom says that sometimes it sounds like you're choking. Can you tell me about that? What's going on? You have a tickle in your windpipe. Okay. Can you show me where that is? Yes, show me where it is. What I'm doing now, listeners, is I'm looking, the animal is showing me the inside of its body, and it's showing me its trachea, its pulmonary bronchi, the primary bronchi. Okay. Lisa, what I'm seeing is he's got some hair.
Okay.
And it's, you know, he was licking his fur, and there's some hair that got down in his windpipe, and what he's trying to do is to cough it back up. He's not choking. I don't see anything in his lungs. I don't see any fluid or anything in his lungs.
Okay.
I don't see any blood. What I see is that there is a little irritation. It's stuck in his airway, and there are little cells in your airway that secrete fluid, and what happens is as you cough, it pushes everything up with this fluid, and the little hair cells then project it out and into the esophagus so they can cough, they can expel it.
Okay.
Beamer, how do you feel otherwise, honey? You're doing pretty good? You feel safe because I can talk to you. I'm very happy, honey. I'm very happy that you feel safe. Are you comfortable, darling? Yeah, Beamer says that he's much more comfortable now. Is he behaving more comfortably, Lisa?
He is, and the Pepcid that you suggested, I got it the very minute you suggested it.
I can hardly hear you, honey.
The Pepcid that you suggested, I got it, and he took it, and he really reacted nicely. His abdomen, it's still distended, but he has less pain in it.
Yeah. Pepcid AC is what I recommended for her. And sometimes when animals are sick, actually, my Frosty was sick last week, too. He had a urinary tract infection, and they gave him Clavamox, which sometimes irritates the stomach. And he was vomiting, too, and I gave him Pepcid AC. For his weight, the vet recommended a half of regular Pepcid AC that you get in the drugstore. And it cleared it up right away. And so Beamer had the same thing. He had some irritation in his stomach. And I recommended the same thing to Lisa, and he's doing better now.
Yeah, and I'm still...
Is he vomiting, Lisa?
No, you know, I thought that he would bring up some hairballs with the sound that he was making. It was like that. And he shakes his head wildly when he's, like, feeling like something's caught in his throat, but nothing comes out. And he's refusing his Petromal. You know, he's eating very little now, and I'm just giving him the Bach flowers to make him happy and some lung support and some ferrous phosphate for his lungs. But I was worried about the choking and thinking that it was related. He has no energy left, you know, to cough and bring up stuff. So.
Yeah, Beamer was diagnosed with cancer in his chest and also partially in his lungs.
Yeah. Yes,
okay.
I saw the X-ray last week, and it didn't look good, but he seems to be okay.
Okay, he's not coughing up blood, is he, Lisa?
No.
I don't see any hemorrhaging in the lung at all. What I'm seeing is that there's a little bit of congestion, which usually is normal.
Okay.
His stomach is much better. He does have a hairball.
Okay.
And he probably is trying to throw it up, but it's sometimes it's hard to get up because it's shaped too round, and they have to keep trying until it can make it up the esophagus. Because when they throw up hairballs, they're always long things that look like little
right.
sausages. They're not round.
Right.
They get that way is it keeps churning in the stomach, and then as it finds a way to come out the esophagus, it narrows and becomes the shape of the esophagus until they can get it out.
Right.
One of the hazards of being a kitty.
Yeah, and he, I think, has less energy now to bring it up.
Probably. It takes some fairly violent force,
right.
Some very, very violent spasms of the stomach to get it up. And if he's not eating a lot, then it's harder because if he was eating food or if he had a lot of water, it would lubricate it to come up easier.
Yeah, makes sense. Oh, I'm so glad I know now.
No, he's doing okay, honey, because all I see is he does have a hairball, and he's trying to get rid of it, and he doesn't want any more of the lax tone or the hairball medicine.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's refusing.
Yeah, he says it's a bit sweet for him. Have you tried butter?
No.
Butter works.
Okay.
Anything greasy works. Butter is, and they love butter. Make
okay.
sure it's a little soft, but
oh,
you can
good,
try
I
butter.
Will.
Yeah, because what he needs is some lubrication to bring it all the way up.
He loves butter.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Okay, wonderful. I thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm enjoying
here.
Listening to you.
Thanks for... I'm sorry?
I say I enjoy listening to you. I'm enjoying listening to your broadcast very much.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to hear from you again.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you so much, Agnes.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye. Well, please call in because we have some very interesting cases that we can talk about. All consultations with animals are interesting, and they're uplifting for the animal, the client, and the communicator. I get involved in this, too. Some consultations are so profound that they take people into unexplored territories and into new realms. I'll give you an example. of what I'm talking about. A woman from the Arizona Humane Society called me about a dog that I'm going to call Buddy. And he was found tied to a tree in the mountains. When dropped off at the shelter, it was apparent that the dog's eyes had been gouged out and it was blind. Buddy must have been blind for some time because the surrounding tissue was completely healed. The woman from the shelter adopted the dog, and she had him for about 2 years when she heard about me and called. I spoke with Buddy, who did not seem to be in distress. Buddy told me that he once belonged to a boy about 10 years old with cerebral palsy. The boy, who was in a wheelchair, was permitted to bring the dog to school with him for protection and companionship. A few boys in his classroom and another older boy were jealous of his relationship with the dog and one day took the dog into the woods and gouged out his eyes with a pocket knife. Now, this is horrible stuff, but it ends up being a fascinating story. Someone found the dog and took it to a veterinarian for medical care. They notified the boy's family that they have the dog, but the dog was blind and his eyes were missing. The boy still wanted to keep Buddy because, being a handicapped person himself, he didn't view the dog as being anything less than a whole being. Sometime later, the boy passed away. The father, who was a believer in nature's way of balancing things, left the dog tied to a tree as prey for the local mountain lions. Now, what astounded and fascinated me about this story was the dog, Buddy, had learned to navigate by using inner vision alone. Now, this is a very interesting phenomenon. When I communicated with Buddy, he told me how he managed to get around. I asked him to show me what he sees. He sent me slightly blurred images of his surroundings, which were clear enough to navigate. So even though his eyes were gone, he was getting some sort of input from light. Buddy said that the boy had become his eyes in the aftermath of the incident and that he could see primarily through inner vision, accomplished telepathically between him and the boy. Inner vision. This is seeing something on your with your what we call the third eye, or across the screen of your consciousness. When the boy died, Buddy had trouble navigating without the boy's help, and the father took him in the woods to die. The Humane Society took the dog in, and one of the veterinary technicians was the one who adopted him. In his new home, she noticed that he could navigate very well without eyes. Another one of her dogs, which she called Little Gal, befriended Buddy and communicated her vision telepathically to the dog in the same manner as the boy did to the dog, always looking out for staircases, furniture in the way, and so on. So what they were doing is they were communicating with each other telepathically, both the boy and the blind dog, because the boy was connected with the dog in such a way that what he saw the animal was aware of. Likewise, when Buddy connected with Little Gal, who was another dog, she became his eyes. And what happened is that she was able to communicate with him, because they had such a tight bond, what was in the way of their path, like furniture or stairs or something. So the dog would still be able to navigate, but with the help of Little Gal, the other dog. Buddy's feelings about himself and his relationships to the other dogs and humans were not different in any way than any other animal I've communicated with. Buddy saw himself as a whole being, just giving his life in love and companionship with others. He ate, slept, and played the same as any pet in the family, requiring no special treatment for his special needs. The best part of this story is that he harbored no resentment toward his attackers. Really an incredible animal. The phenomenon of telepathy being used to provide sensory information from one being to another has only been referred to in mystical literature. It is the ability to see, hear, taste, or smell without the usual sense organs. In this case, in Buddy's case, without the eyes. Some sages and enlightened teachers claim to have the ability to see through their ears and hear through their skin and other fantastic phenomena. Now, these are very enlightened beings who are on the earth today, and they claim to have these abilities. It seems all very fascinating to me, but psychologically, as a scientist, I can tell that it probably does happen. These teachers, then, claim that the universe contains all information and that within each photon of light, or even the smallest unit of energy, the entire universe is contained in its entirety. To observe, one merely needs to pay attention. In my communications with Buddy, I was reminded of an example of this phenomenon that was presented in the TV series Kung Fu. If you remember watching Kung Fu, he had a blind master. And the master, even though he was blind, could identify the student, which he called Grasshopper, which was the Carradine boy, and distinguish him from all other life forms or objects by paying attention to all that was around him. In other words, he experienced life, all of life. Like Merlin, in his teachings to the young King Arthur, he instructed his student, if you want to think like a bird, become a bird. Very fascinating phenomena. I was very taken back by this when I first encountered this lady and her dog, Buddy. I was totally at awe with the dog, that it was able to be so loving and so giving despite his mishap, the unfortunate thing that happened to him. But his devotion to the boy, boy with cerebral palsy, was so powerful. And the boy's devotion to the dog was so powerful that they literally became as one mind, and they operated together as a pair. It would be very interesting to talk to a seeing eye dog to see how that level of communication takes place. It probably is something very similar, but I've never been asked to communicate with a seeing eye dog.
Hey, Agnes, this is Ann.
Ann, hello.
Yes, Ann. And Rocket.
Thank you for calling in. This is my friend,
Ann. Okay, wonderful show, and something that you said really caught my attention, because you know how much I travel, and Rocket always goes.
Yes.
But I have that problem of her barking in the room. And you told me that she was afraid that I was not going to come back.
Yeah.
It was a new place. Everywhere we go is different. And she was afraid I wasn't coming back. But I'm wondering also if, you know, she had that, if she was separated from her mother too soon.
When did you get Rocket?
You know, she was about three months old. But I don't know when she was separated from her mother.
Oh.
Because she could have been at the pet store or somewhere else before I got her.
Did you get her from a shelter?
No, she came from a pet store.
A pet store. Okay, let me ask her. Okay. Hi, Rocket. Hi, honey, it's Aunt Agnes. Yeah, I'm talking with Mom on the phone. And we've never talked about this before, but can you tell me where you lived before you came to live with Ann? Okay. Rocket says that he lived with, or she, lived with a young couple, but they were very inexperienced in caring for dogs. They really didn't know what they were doing. So on the advice of their parents, this was a young married couple, they gave the dog up for adoption. Honey, do you happen to know how old you were when you were taken away from your mommy, your dog mommy? Okay. Apparently the girl that was that adopted him was the daughter of the woman whose dog had puppies. So, in other words, it stayed in the families. So
okay.
I think she took the animal too young away from its mommy. Rocket, when you went to live with your first mom, your first human mom, was it scary for you? He's says yes, she says yes, because she didn't know what she was supposed to do. And she wondered what happened to her brothers and sisters and where her mommy was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Rocket, let me ask you this, honey. When you travel with your mommy and you go stay in a hotel, how come you get scared and you bark? What is it you're afraid of, baby? Okay. Rocket says that when you go to a new town, she's afraid because she's in an unfamiliar place.
Mm-hmm.
And she usually knows your comings and goings because she rides with you in the car all the time.
Right.
But when you go to a place like a hotel or you stay someplace that's unfamiliar, she doesn't know how she can find her way back to you if mm-hmm. something happens and you don't come back.
Right.
Okay. I can desensitize her to that, Anne. Do you want me to?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Rocket, honey, I'm going to tell you something, and I want you to believe me, okay? Your mommy loves you very, very much. You know that. And when she goes someplace, she always takes you. And she will always come back. The reason she doesn't take you to some places is because dogs aren't allowed. So if she wants to go down and have breakfast in the restaurant, dogs aren't allowed. But she will be back. And when she comes back, she'll take you for a walk and take you places that dogs are allowed. Okay? Yeah. So just understand that when mommy leaves, it's because she's going to a place that don't allow dogs. But she will always, always come back. Even though you don't know where you are, she knows exactly where you are. She knows the town that you're in. She knows the name of the building you're in. And she knows what room you're in. What can we do so that you feel comfortable? Okay. Rocket says that she would like you to tell her where you're going and how long. So if
okay.
you're going to go out to eat, say, I'm going out to get some dinner, and I will be back in about an hour, or I'll be back by lunchtime, or, you know, if you're going to go see your son, say, I'm going to see Ford, and we'll be back by dinner time. So that she
okay.
knows approximately how long she needs to wait before she gets nervous.
Okay.
It's like having somebody else in the house, you know, or in
right.
the room with you. You would never leave another person alone without saying where you're going and when you're expected to return,
right.
because it makes that person very uncomfortable, like where they go and how do I know if they're all right. You know, it's the same
mm-hmm.
type of thing. You have to honor the animal as a family member, but as a fellow being, too. And they're very intelligent. And
right.
they understand when you talk to in words that you're going to lunch or you're going to dinner or you're going shopping and you'll be back in a couple of hours. Now, animals don't really understand time, but they know
right.
daytime, nighttime, dinner time. And they can calculate just by, you know, the feelings of hunger.
Mm-hmm.
About that time that you're going to return. And it makes
right.
them a lot calmer, especially
okay.
if you're in a, you know, if you're in a different town or in a different location.
Right.
Because it's
right.
not home. And once you leave the room, they don't know if you're coming back. But if you tell them you're coming back, they're perfectly all right.
Right.
Rocket, is that okay with you? It would make me feel better.
Okay. All right. Well, we will try that. I always take her bed and her little quilt and her bear and all her stuff, you know, when we go somewhere, so she does feel like she's got her stuff with her. But,
right. Because it makes her feel like it's almost like taking a child that is for adoption. They don't even have their own suitcase. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
They feel like they're always transient. But it's helped adoptive children or foster children feel like they're part of the general scheme and they're wanted if they have their own luggage. It makes a huge difference
right.
in children. It also makes a huge difference in dogs and cats. If you
mm-hmm.
they have to stay at the vet's overnight, I always take their bed, too, and their toy.
Right.
Because it makes them feel like, okay, this is my stuff, and I'm here, and I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
That they're not being left someplace that's unfamiliar.
Right. Well, I had figured that was the main problem, just that she didn't know where she was. And
yeah.
then Ford and I go off and leave for an hour or two. But we'll see if this doesn't help her. I bet she'll feel a lot better now.
Well, you know, also, Rocket thinks if you're going out, why can't she come?
Well, I do take her almost everywhere except
right.
the grocery store.
But sometimes you can't take her.
Right.
And you have to say, well, you can't come, honey, because I'm going to eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be back. And
right.
if you tell them why they're being left behind, it really helps. And they do understand.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell her next time. Fortunately, we don't travel as much as we did. But
mm-hmm.
this will help greatly. So, thank you so much, Agnes.
Thank you for calling in, Ann. Always good to talk to you.
Well, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Sometimes animals can get a fear of flying. Now, let me tell you a story about a woman who... call me about a beautiful dog who was a Newfoundland, and we'll call him Newfie. Newfie had several allergies since he came to them at 8 weeks of age, and I was certainly old enough to leave his mother. They had to spend a fortune going to specialist after specialist to relieve the dog's itching, hot spots, and skin and ear infections. He barked and he trembled when he saw other dogs and strangers, and anything that was new. She asked me to contact him. And when I spoke to him, he was a delightful dog, but I discovered the origin of his nervousness. The couple purchased him from a breeder in Kansas and had them flown to Tennessee so they could pick him up. Newfie showed me that he was deadly afraid of the darkness of the luggage bay area in the airplane where he was kept, the sound of the engines, and the tilting of the plane during takeoff and landing. For him, he was in the most terrifying situation of his life. He was 8 weeks old, and he wanted his mother. I helped Newfie overcome his fears by taking him in his mind back to the time when he boarded the plane. This is how we desensitize an animal. Each step of the journey, he related to me what he was hearing and he was feeling. As he did this, I reminded him that what he wasn't remembering was that he was okay and not injured, and he was still alive. So he shows me that the engine started up, and he was scared. And I said, yes, but you're okay, and you're still alive. He said, well, then we went, it felt like we were moving. And I said, yes, but what you're not remembering is that you were still okay. And each step of the process, I added to the memory that he was okay and that he's still okay now. After Newfie finished telling me his horror story, he felt better. I assured him that this was the only one bad experience in his life that would ever, and it would never happen again. I told him that his new mom and dad would tell him in words if they were going someplace new and explain what would be there and what to expect, which they were very glad to do. Newfie's allergies subsided considerably. He is off most of his medications, and he has placed his love and trust in the hands of his persons, which is very normal. Animals get hot spots. Sometimes they lick their fur completely off. This is a condition called neurodermatitis, and it is because the animal's nervous and he doesn't know what to do with his anxiety, and it makes his skin itch. There are things that you can do for that. They have a wonderful homeopathic remedy called Rescue Remedy. It's available in a cream form. It's also available in a liquid form that you can put in their water. It's for stress. It's actually made for humans. And what it does, there's no chemical in it, because homeopathic medicine does not have chemical in it. What it actually does is it gives you more psychic energy to deal with stress. So, for example, if I'm going away and I'm going to be away several days, I will ask the babysitter who sits for my cats to put 3 drops of Rescue Remedy in their water every time they change the water. This helps them to deal with the separation from me. And it also helps them to calm down. If you take it yourself, and this is available at General Nutrition Center or practically every grocery store or place that sells vitamins has it. It's called Rescue Remedy. It is made by Bach. If you take it yourself, it calms you down. It doesn't calm you down like a tranquilizer does. What it does is it helps you get more psychic energy so that you have clear thinking and you can control yourself. Then, once you have clear thinking, you can find a solution, a rational solution to your problem. But nobody can do anything when they're under a great deal of stress. I would like to remind our listeners to tune in to BBS Radio on Thursday evenings at 7 for Metaphysical Straight Talk with my friend Atira Hatton. Atira is a gifted psychic and clairvoyant who can tune into your heart's mission in this life. It's very, very important to know why you're here and what you're trying to do. Atira is associated with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment and was picked by their staff out of 2,000 applicants to give readings and metaphysical lectures at their Virginia Beach headquarters. Atira's goal is to teach, and she is a wonderful teacher, about the nature of spirit and how we are all able to talk to angels, guides, masters, and loved ones on the other side. Next week, our guest will be my friend Leslie Corin Ash. Leslie is a licensed independent clinical social worker who will talk to us about her experiences with patients that have neurological disorders like Lou Gehrig's disease. She is a fascinating individual. She is also an animal communicator. And what she does when the person starts to deteriorate with their neurological disorders, she asks their pets to assist her in understanding their person's health issues. And so if the person can't talk, the dog or the cat will fill in for them. Fascinating woman. She also has much experience in communicating with whales and dolphins and other marine life. She should be a fascinating guest, and I hope you tune in. I want to thank you for listening tonight and all the callers who contributed to the show with their questions. If there's a particular topic that you would like to hear about animals, please email me at talktopets@aol.com. If you wish to receive my free newsletter on Mondays that tells what the topic and guests of the show will be, visit my website at www.petstellthetruth.com. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, there is a little sign-up item, and type your name and email, or just type in your email address where indicated, and they will automatically send you every Monday, or Sunday or Monday, a newsletter about the show. The newsletter will also contain facts about animals like we talked about tonight. Interesting things about how animals think, how they live, what they desire, what their hopes and dreams are, and fascinating things that they do out of love for their persons. Thank you again for calling, and thank you for listening. If you like this programming, please drop a line to bbsradio.com and let them know that you would like to hear more of this type of programming. This is Agnes Thomas saying good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.